The Shire of Nanup would like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung people of the Noongar Nation as the traditional custodians of the land of which this podcast is recorded on, and we extend our respect to the elders past and present, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal Australians living within the Shire of Nanup.
First thing I ever remember, beginning of every term, you were reminded, respect. Respect for the neighbour. Respect for the women in the kitchen and in the infirmary. We've lost that.
This is the Nanup Oral History Podcast. We're here today talking with Nanup treasure, Michael Loveland. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michael. Can you tell us a little bit about you and your family?
My father, in England, he was a good tradesman. He got a big write-up on his decorating and whatever have you. Him and my mother worked for Petters Diesels during the World War II. So I know the Petters Diesels, I know their motors. I worked with them and all the rest of it. My mother was the accountant. My father was working in the factory. My mother was the accountant. After the war, went back down south, Seaford, Sussex. The nearest contact to France was New Haven Harbour. And that was the closest contact with France and the continent. And, I went to finishing school at Lewis Grammar School, and my three educators there, or two of them actually, they got me to discover to use all my hidden talents, writing, English literature, the whole lot, history. My mother followed my father out to Australia. Oh, yes, he went. He tried a partnership with a member of my mother's family. Didn't work. You can have teamwork in partnerships. You can have teamwork. You can't have different ideas or anything. They were both tradesmen. They were different backgrounds. So, anyway, then the Labour took over government in England, and that was the end of good economics. So, my mother followed my father back to Australia. He'd been out here in the 20s. He ran away from home. He's very young, and got on a sailing vessel to Australia. His parents tried to stop him. He paid his way and he got out here. He travelled Australia. Oh, he travelled Australia. He done well, he done a lot of jobs, but didn't know how to handle money. So when he wanted to go back to England, his parents wanted him to go back to England. They just sent him money for the trip. He had no money. So it was like that since we first came back in Australia. My mother followed my father out here. First class travel on the Strathaird liner. He got this farm 3 miles out on the Buston Road, just short of the Cundup Turnel, the old Cundup Turnel.
Can you tell us when that farm was bought?
Yes. And the first Australian I met, there was a huge hay shed on the farm. And Jack Sabot, he was the first Australian resident here that I would have met. It was in the second year on the farm. First farm, I was a handyman, fencing the whole lot. My father run the dairy. And when he realised that tree was dangerous, I don't know what Jack Sabot charged him or who paid. I don't think they were both short of money at the time. My father left my mother with a mortgage. She wouldn't. She, she wouldn't let him interfere with the farming. that was a big change for her. She was a home prayed mother. I went in, I was born to a new house, and when I came out here, I was all my first trade. Drainage. I knew, studied drainage. I studied all the volcanic changes of the earth and all sorts of things. When I came out here, I was ready with drainage. Of course, when my father left, I'd take over the farm. But anyway, when he walked out, I had my accident in 69. My mother died in the accident. The old Safe West Highway, Harvey Turnoff, roadworks were in operation. So I had no control over what happened then. I remember driving in the accident. My father found out about the accident after I came out. April 1970. He heard about the accident. Sold up the farm, married again. The money soon went, and he died in a level crossing accident, train level crossing accident. So he died, left with nothing. All he gave me was a machine off the farm, but that was all it. I used that to make other things.
How old were you when you came to Nana?
17.
And that's when they bought the farm?
Cool Springs and Rainwater.
Can you tell us about that farm?
Yes, 200 acres. It had a cool spring running the whole length of the farm. And it started off in the bush above the farm. And in the summer, the spring, the water would still be running very slow. And what happened was, skilled in drainage, of course, I knew all about looking after the land, looking after the trees and the restaurant, using them, looking after nature. When I was at college prep, there was an Indians during the war. They had a crop rotation farming. They taught me well. First experience when I went to college prep, beginning every term, because it was boarding college, so the students would be changing. And first thing I ever remember, beginning of every term, we were reminded, respect. Respect for the neighbour. Respect for the women in the kitchen and in the infirmary. We've lost that. We've got away from it. That's what needs to come back. But it needs to be in the schooling. It needs to be in every system. But it should start in the family. It should start in the family.
Did you have that at home as well, Michael?
It was a regular routine in the college prep. They gave me good education. A little bit strict, but very, very kindly. There was millions with that type of people. Very strict. Love and respect go together. Okay? You can't put force on anybody. When Adam and Eve come into it, supposed to live together as one and work together as one, never work. Each used the other for selfish purposes. And it's been right with us ever since. And we haven't learnt to put it right. And the politicians we've got won't be putting it right for a while yet.
I know that you had the farm, and it was run as a dairy and a chicken farm. You studied drainage and design engineering?
I was the first plumber here in 1962. I was fortunate. The Water Corporation's first scheme water here, up in the hills, they were retiring their chief engineer, worked in Manjima. They were retiring him. Now, he gave me a thorough test. It covered me for gas fitting, all pressure containment tasks, water, the whole lot. He was very thorough. But that was the last thing he did. He didn't get to teach anybody else that. That training never went to anybody else. He was gone. That's not the way to go. That's what's been happening ever since. Disposing of the skill.
What did you do with those skills?
I moved the mill manager's eight-room house from Willow Springs to Carlotta in 1956 when I was farming. So I know my skills. and it had to be delivered to Joan Lige's property, niece Nanup. I renovated the family home here behind the garage. Everybody wanted me then. They wanted good tradesmen, really know their job. So my house was first I plumbed for the water, skim water. My house was the first one to have drainage problems. It was built on a heavy clay pad. The only drainage I had was seepage. There was no sewer, there was no separate system that worked, but I had a separate system at the backyard, and it's been going ever since. And it's still going for another 100 years, going looking after it. But the point is this, I had to go through all my design capacity. The drainage I've got in that house will never break down, not while I'm alive anyway. But I tried every drainage system you could imagine. They called me in the high school was first built, the new high school. And I'll never forget that. They called me out one day, workers called me out one day. They'd drawn up the plans for the high school, top of a steep hill. They'd gone ahead, they put the foundations in and the retaining walls, and then they decided they had no drainage on the top of a steep hill, mind you. And that's stupidity. You think of your drainage first, not second or last. And they did the same thing with the hospital here in the 1990s. When that was modernised, 2009. Workers went in there, they modernised the lot, improved it, expanded it. That last ward was the maternity ward. It had its septic system. And the drains went right across the top of that steep hill. I should have had drainage to last them 100 years. They never had it.
Did you put drainage in?
The drainage, no. What happened is I couldn't intervene because that was a public contract. You know what I mean? They'd already contracted, designed a drainage system to go down the Don't Road Hill. And after 12 months, the effluent was flowing across the road into Drury Cave's yard. They had to put a seepage drainage in Sam Dennis Farm paddock opposite. That's what they had to do at the high school, because they had no other way. You design your drains before you even start work, not afterwards. You can start using your brains.
I have here that you have state registration for drainage.
Oh, yes, state registration, yes. If I ever had a trouble on the road or something, I was always covered by my own insurance. I don't like the insurance systems anyway. Emerald Building and Engineering, they had all my capacity put aside for emergencies. I renovated the pub in 67. Three owners up in Perth, including Curly Williams, Session Myrtle and Nelson, local administration, scaffolding around the main building, pure zinc guttering, mind you, Miller's. I was their drainage, I was their plumber, I was their gas fitter, the whole lot. And the man I took over property maintenance from, old Bill Worthington, he was the one that built the first post office here.
Did you used to shop at the mill store?
The mill store didn't get burnt down when the mill was burnt down. So the mill chain was in existence. Jack Lindsay had the farmers, more as a farmer's mark then, for it.
You said when you came to Nanup, there used to be heavy winter and long frost.
Heavy winter. Oh, there were cold winters. There were cold winters on the farm. Heavy frost. They never get any snow, fortunately, but never mind. When I was on the farm, timber from the mill was railed direct from Nanup to Busselton. The timber used to go on the jetty, delivered all over the world and all Australia. So that was the miller's outlet. The engine driver always used to wave to us on the farm. Of course, they had a Cambrai. I know all about the Cambrai system.
What's the Cambrai system?
Cambrai, that is where the line repair crew lived. Once a week, they'd be down along the line. I got to know the linesmen because they went up the full length of the farm. The railway reserve was burnt every year, every autumn, to stop a fire from getting away. I looked after the farm and they looked after the railway, so we were safe. We had a fire surrounding the old farm. There was no way in and no way out for a week. There was no phone, there was nothing in them days. I had two neighbours from somewhere on the farm, Maud and Pearl Roberts. They were Cundinup, lived in Cundinup. I never knew the family, never knew the background. Every Thursday afternoon, 1 o'clock, never miss. You could set your clock by them. Show up past the farm, toot toot, the ring, the wave, and into Nap, do their supplies, get their shopping, go back. Ah, that's a sad story too. That's a sad story. I don't know exactly, can't put a date on it. Not in the 70s, they managed a family farm, Cundinup. They sold their farm, never got the money. I know the bloke who got it wasted it.
So you had a car accident in 1969?
Late 69. To the best of my knowledge, I was unconscious for 3 weeks. And the exact date of the accident was on the 13th of November, if I remember rightly. I found that out later. I was clear of any negligence, but roadworks were in operation, so it had been very hard to say anything was the cause of it. Hazel Meads. It was about just after the 2002 sewer went through. Hazel Meads was living in her home. I wrote a poem for her husband when he died, read at the graveside, and now it had been. A quiet glen at Woodlands, it's a simple dwelling there. Its pink pine walls and cadmium tints, glowing with the warmth of the welcome within, 'tis a lovely scene. Mrs. Backman's deep yellows and greens, a retreat from the hustling, bustling world. It's peaceful, serene. A place I come often to see, to capture forever the stately splendour of blue gums and silver wattle trees, tall slender pines, the land of the wallaby, naturalist wonder, and the home of the paper bark trees. And way down below us, 150, maybe 200 feet, the Blackwood River winds, eastward and westward towards the sea. The grand outcrops, the fine stone bluffs, the testy imagination. In the men was named for pioneer days, a land to be battled and won. It takes a heart of lion, endurance of man to be the visitor's lusty song. Now I'm going to tell you something. Last big job I've done here and now, Maria Crowell wrote me a poem because I rebuilt Templemore as it was, dedicated to him loving as he can visualise. The car slowed down to cross the bridge, the dapple of the Blackwood. A pine-clad ridge rose up as an evening star shone down, at evening time and out town. And we saw a yellow sign for sale as it hung an old veranda rail. High inspiration danced about as you looked at it all inside and out. Tumbled down, yes, but still sedate. This grand old house with a grand old date. It's brave old heart in the pool estate. The age has not much time to spare. It could still withstand life's wear and tear. Perhaps a wish or a magic find press the old roof with a blessing find. High hydrangeas blue in the Norfolk pine. Side time is a potent anodyne. It's time, old Templemore, that you live today as you were before. From forest slopes come a wild bird's call, and a thrill still the nearby timbers tall. As 72 became 73, old Templemore creatures in, oh dear me. Here I am crumbling, bereft and bored, but good heavens, I'm going to be restored. I've had a lot of rewards in my ears, been a little bit disappointed there. Never could work that woman out. Catherine Walsh, who lived up on the hill above Nanook, never could understand that woman. She moved from Nanook to Donnybrook eventually. She left a young son or a daughter, I think. She died of drug overdose. She could never work out this world. I don't know, I can understand it.
I'm Leanne. I'm a Nanup local. I've got a business in the main street. And we would regularly have Michael in for a visit. In fact, I think Michael came to visit every afternoon just before five for, about 5 years, I'd say. So in that time, Michael would love to tell lots of little stories. So some of the stories he told was about a wood heater that he had designed. So it was just a normal slow combustion wood heater, completely normal. And it obviously sat between the kitchen and the lounge room. But what he did is he made an addition on the top that was like a spinning hot plate, so that when he was cooking in the kitchen, he could have that there and he'd be using it. But then when he was in the lounge room and he wanted to just have his cup of tea, this thing obviously just spun around and he'd have his kettle there. I never saw it. It was just one of Michael's intriguing little stories that certainly piqued curiosity. Yeah, other things. Our building is in the main street. It's a shop. It was built in the 1920s. It actually has 22 rooms in it. So it's got three shops, and then at the back is the house. So it was built in 1920s, but it's had various additions done to it. So Michael was a builder. So he built the loft upstairs. So it's got this amazing little steep staircase that goes up to that, and then this loft sits up the top and we look out over the roof space and everything down the main street, which I'm quite sure not many people are aware of in Nanup. So yeah, Michael built that. I'm not exactly sure what else he did, but certainly the back of the house had a wet area that was, you know, the bathroom, laundry, and a little veranda sleep out, and that all became enclosed. So I think Michael did that. The one of the shops was open, so it had the front doors as you see them now, but from the front right to the very back, there were no walls. It was just open because that was part of the general store, and that's where they had the stock feed and oils. And at some point that got enclosed into various rooms and it got clad and a ceiling put in. I think Michael did that as well. And it had a little veranda on the back, which we've since enclosed. So during COVID, we were all keeping an eye on people that were living on their own, and so I was going over to just keep an eye on Michael. I went over quite early and he's got a little cottage, so there he is, bless his cotton socks, on the front doorstep, and he's got the door open and he's there in his little knitted vest and his shorts and everything, and he's got his piano accordion and he's just there playing away. It's about 7:30 in the morning to the neighbours.
Nicole Boddicker, and I have my first memory and introduction to Michael Loveland was the first time I experienced a music festival as an employee of the Shire of Nanup, and I think it was the Friday. Everyone was setting up the music festival. I was in my office doing my thing and I could hear this music. I could hear an accordion, and I'm thinking, what is that? Oh, a music festival, this is so wonderful. So then I get out of my office and I go to the front, and there's Michael Loveland doing his accordion for about 15 minutes to all of us Shire workers as his appreciation to us. And I just thought, you know, that's pretty special, and it was really unique. And I suppose that's my first introduction to Michael. And after that, you know, I would see him riding his bike around town, and, you know, and now he pops into the Shire all the time. He's such a friendly face.
I think as well, from my perspective about Michael, when I first moved to town, pretty sure he was in the Nanup writers group, and the amount of poetry and literature in his head is astounding. I mean, actually, he's got so much knowledge about so many things. The way he can retain it and just let it flow out of him is really special. I haven't really experienced that. I mean, I don't have a brain like that. It's not there at the forefront.
Always has a story. Always has his motto, which is about people now need to remember kindness and need to remember their manners when they are with people, and just what that brings.
You know, characters like Michael are really special to the fabric of the community. Everyone knows him. Everyone's got their eye out looking out for him, making sure he's safe, or, you know, you say hello to him as he passes you on his bike.
He just has this can-do attitude. We're all kind of like mother henning and being like, should you be on your bike and are you okay and all of that, whereas he's just like, this is what I do and this is my transportation and I'm fine. Of course I'm fine. Even if I fall off, I'm going to continue on my journey because that's who I am and that's what I do.
Yeah, I do believe he is a strong character and the community value his contributions, just a friendly smile. Or I think everyone in Nanup has fond memories of their interactions with Michael Loveland.
You've been listening to the Nanup Oral History Podcast. If you are not a Nanupian, please come and visit our small town. We would love you to come. If you are a Nanupian, please share it with your family and friends. We're really proud of this and we hope you are too.
This podcast was made possible through the successful funding by the Department of Community's Age Friendly Community Program, facilitated through the local government's professionals and supported by the Shire of Nanup. We would like to thank all of those who have shared their stories to make this podcast happen. The podcast has been produced by the Shire of Nanup's Economic and Community Development Team and edited by Simple Ben Stories.